Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show. We're talking about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun as it relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us today. I want to thank you for sharing with your friends, your family members. We're well over 550,000 listeners and growing. This is wonderful. You know, today, first question, is your money smiling? One of our guests today, Ken Honer, author of Happy Money, The Japanese Art of Making Peace with Your Money. Ken's going to show us how to create a life of abundance while changing our relationship with money. I'm going to be talking about how to secure a bigger Social Security check. So you want to make sure you're there for that. Now, here's an interesting thing now that COVID's kind of winding down. Companies are opting for complete return to work or a hybrid model. The office space itself must undergo that post-pandemic makeover. Aside from extra hand sanitizer, plexiglass barriers, we have best-selling author, Dr. Rebecca Smith. She's also known as Rebecca the Film Doctor, is revealing how to create a more welcoming environment post-pandemic that enhances employees' productivity and engagement. I want to call you Rebecca. Is that okay?
That's perfect.
You're just too nice for Dr. Smith. What I would really like to do, because I know you are involved in the film industry,
right,
and you're a best-selling author of the book Born to Do It, Becoming a Leader of Business Niches Using Powerful Spiritual Techniques. And I know we're also talking about the workplace, but let's help our audience understand where you came from, your story a little bit.
Yes. So it's kind of interesting how my story kind of transpired, because I thought I had my life all mapped out. I thought what I should be doing is working in the world of academia, being a lecturer, get my PhD, and working in that world and teaching. And then I realized when I was doing my PhD, I did enjoy it. It was certainly a challenge, but then I wanted to do something different and get away from the computer and writing. So a friend of mine who was asked to produce a horror film festival said to me, would you like to help out? And I was like, yeah, why not? Something to do. And that something to do was actually my true calling. And it woke me up to find out this is what I should be doing with my life. I need to be, and what I wanted to be doing was working in the film industry, in the world of film distribution. And from that point onwards, I loved doing the festival kind of side of things, producing a festival. And when I was speaking to filmmakers, they said to me that they haven't got anybody they can turn to help them get their films seen in festivals and strategize. So I thought, I can do this. There's a gap in the market. I've got some knowledge. I'm going to make this work. And since 2010 onwards, I've never looked back of leaving academia. I got the doctorate. I have the doctorate, which I'm proud of. But then I went straight on into the film industry and just carved a niche with my company, The Festival Doctor, worked on it every day to get it where it is now as an established brand in the film industry in the UK.
That's wonderful. I know a number of people who went and got their PhD just to say they did it.
Yeah.
Got it done.
It does happen.
A friend of mine, he actually has a PhD in psychology. He's full on like an athletic person, but he did it because he's in the health insurance industry. I go, why did you go complete it? He goes, well, you know what? I just got to finish. That's it. Most people get a PhD. They got to finish. Sometimes they realize they don't have anything to do with what they did before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Help me understand how you started moving towards more of the spiritual nature to help people with productivity, well-being, balance, all that kind of stuff.
I wasn't the most spiritual person when I found what my sole purpose was. I didn't know what that was or what that kind of technology was until later on down the line. But I've always been, you know, very positive, but I didn't know anything really about universe or attraction, the secret, nothing like that, or, you know, tarot cards, nothing like that at all. And it wasn't until I had a bad breakup with an ex-boyfriend of mine that a friend of mine said, oh, you know, maybe turn to the world of spirituality to help you attract more of what you want and less of what you don't want. And then she taught me the world of angel therapy, tarot cards, cosmic ordering, manifestation, things that I had no idea existed until I was around 20, 26, 27 when this kind of all occurred. So it was a little bit later in life with a spiritual awakening. But when I had these tools, my whole life changed. And when I met my first spiritual kind of teacher, he said, you have no idea what my previous life was like until I got into the world of cosmic ordering manifestation. I was like, okay, I wasn't sure at first. Obviously, I was a bit skeptical. But then as I got more into those worlds and feng shui, I found ways to apply them through the people I was working with into my business and also myself. And it changed my whole life. And I became I used to be a very anxious and energy person. And I found it very hard to do work on myself and generally not to be, you know, anxious. But now it's the opposite. It's a lot less. Obviously, we all get that. All of us do. It's natural to get a stronger resilience, but it's nowhere near like it was before. I was in a state where I was, hair was falling out, anxiety was so bad I couldn't go in a car because I thought I might die. So it was like really bad. And now it's a lot different. I travel everywhere around the world. I'm always doing things at my business, at responsibility, and I'm busy. So it's a lot different to where it used to be. And all of that is down to bringing in spiritual practices and also bringing in key business techniques, as the book explains. But spiritual is really an important part of anyone's business.
Oh, no, I agree with that. When I first went to work in the corporate world, I went to work for a 100-year-old company out in California. It was interesting because they had the 1970s partitions because they were like bright orange. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to say throw up orange because they had faded. That's what they had all over the company, or either that or they had the gray ones with the grayish walls and stuff like that. And I could see how a lot of people in there looked like they were in a London tube station and they looked like they're, you know, the Walking Dead. And not the Walking Dead like zombies, but they just all look like they're just wiped out. You look at that and say, okay, I can see how that environment was. And then I can look at things that I created in other places where it's vastly different. People more excited, engaged, they're positive. They're looking at solving issues as opposed to just trying to get through things. So I saw that and I'm like, oh, it was a great reflection. Now, when it comes to this post-pandemic workplace to enhance engagement and productivity, what kind of upgrades would employers or even employees working in a business want to make, even with their own space?
Most definitely feng shui, because I used to think that feng shui was just in the home and just reorganizing, you know, maybe furniture, but it's a lot more to it than that. So when I was at a networking event, one of my dear friends introduced me to a lady called Marie Diamond. She's actually featured in The Secret in the feng shui section. Mm-hmm. And told me like how when you actually move things around in your house, where the right energy flows for abundance, health, wisdom, knowledge, etc. And obviously financial is one big thing there. And also using the right colors, what she calls quantum colors. When you tap into the right colors in the home, everything will change. And I was quite surprised by that. But then when you apply that in your home and your office, whether that be with a team of people or by yourself in your home office, wearing the right colors and on your clothing and in your branding, it really does change. Like I did think it was just literally in a house, but you can do it everywhere. And also what she taught me, Marie, was how to change energy in my logo, in my branding, because that too, I have no idea about. Before I was all dark and nobody could see what I was trying to do. And my logo was really like small and dull, but now it's a lot more vibrant and bright thanks to feng shui. So that meant highly. I remember our conversation I had with her. I said to her, you know, here's my business card. And it was just like this black logo. And she said, well, first of all, the woman on your logo, she should be facing your logo. You're looking outside your logo right now, her back's to it. Therefore, she has her back to your clients and you're closing the door on them. So not letting any abundance in. And for one thing, it's in black. You need to put in more colors that resonate with you and your energy field. Right now, it's very dull, and that's why everything's a low vibration. When you say that, you're like, wow, that does make sense. You see when companies change their colors, just how much more thriving they become and more abundant they become and successful they become.
Oh, it just kind of opens up to somebody's eyes and see the sparkle in it.
Exactly, it is. And when she told me about colors, I was just surprised how powerful colors can be. But then when you actually do change stuff in your office and yourself and your clothing, and your branding, you're like, wow, I feel quite good now. Seeing this has this very interesting effect on the mental well-being too, but it's all about energy. You know, energy goes down and then colors play a huge part in that. So having the right colors for your branding, your teamwork and your office can make a huge difference to everybody in there.
This following upon that, so individuals who are used to wearing the dark suits, the blue, the blacks and stuff like that, might behoove them to start looking at I don't expect to see a bunch of males coming in with a red suit or something like that in a business environment, or bright yellow or something, maybe brighter shirts, brighter ties, all that kind of stuff. Is that would help as well?
Absolutely. So Marie talked to me when we met. She says, you need to look into what we call quantum colors. The quantum colors is what she put together, which is kind of like the key colors that one should wear for whatever they want to achieve with their goals. So she said to me, when you go for this meeting with this big client that you want to sign up, then wear, for example, gold for abundance, silver magnificence, and also around the pinks and the fuchsias are also good for clarity and for success. And cobalt blue, if you can, somewhere in your bag or your clothing there, which is also about leadership, showing you can lead the project. So I was a bit like, really? Because I just wore black before. Yeah, and you know, that gray you just described. It was quite
No, we all been there. You know what? If you grew up in my home, if you grew up in the 80s, it was the dark suits. I mean, for my first major job, my boss, it was a three-piece suit. It was always dark. It was either green or blue or black. And you wore the white shirt and the dark tie. And his idea of business casual was taking off the vest, you know?
Yeah, so very different world completely. And I know exactly what you mean. It was really something else. And I was like, oh, okay. So then I changed it and my whole mental health changed because I was quite down, obviously, with just freeing up my business. I just started it up and I was a little bit all over the shop. But having the right colors really just like literally made me change. And I looked at her when I met her. She was wearing this like massive gold necklace, ivory, saffron yellow. All these colors she told me would actually achieve her goals. And they did. Everyone walking towards her and just heard how powerful colors and the whole feng shui thing is. And every time I go out now, I have no black clothes. I have one black outfit that almost put like gold on it to really change the energy flow. And it really does make you feel a whole lot different. So I ask everybody to try it. So I go from a day of gray to purple and gold and you'll change. It does make a huge difference.
So a lot of people in academia and just talking about this type of stuff would be like taboo for them because they just can't get there. Especially the mathematical people, they just don't see the logic in it. But the thing is, they might not see it logically in their mind, but you could see it out there with a lot of people who dress in that positive fashion. You can see they're going somewhere. Things are going on, so to speak. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a little break right now. But first, I want to thank Scoremaster.com for sponsoring the Saving with Steve show. Did you know the average American has 97 points that they can add to their credit score? But no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster have cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised their credit score 33 points in just 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right. Try Scoremaster for free and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/saving. That's scoremaster.com/saving. Again, scoremaster.com/saving. Now, I want to thank you again. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show. Again, we're talking about the ins and outs of money. I have the film doctor, Dr. Rebecca Smith, talking about how we're moving back into this post-pandemic workplace and doing it with more engagement and productivity. And we were just talking about the use of colors, whether it be you in the office, how it could brighten up the room, bring you more clients. At the end of the day, it's about more money, especially if you're in the workplace. So one of the things people use or have heard of, what we call vision boards. I know you have some tips for designing and placing vision boards in the office to create innovation and inspiration. So walk us through how you go about doing that.
So vision boards is, again, this was all new to me when I began to learn more about the spiritual world. And it actually was Marie Diamond again, who said to me, you should probably think about looking into vision boards as well for your business. So vision boards are really powerful because they can actually, again, change the mindset. So with a vision board, what you do is you put on images that reflect what you want to manifest and achieve in your life. That can be all areas, not just wealth and money and abundance, but it can be everything in terms of, you know, health, well-being, wisdom, lifestyle, the whole lot, everything in your life. And she told me what to do is she said, do it landscape and put in the center of the vision board a picture of you, because you are the center of your universe. Then she said, put things around that, which are words and pictures. So put the pictures that really resonate with you, whether it be, you know, a happy couple, if you want romance, or if you want success for your clients, and maybe in a gym, if you want to, you know, really get ripped in the gym or something like that. And then put your manifestations below and affirm what you want. My intention is to run a thriving business that earns $200 a week or something like that, whatever you want to do. And put the words by the pictures. The universe needs words and pictures. Sometimes I do vision boards without words, but have like a key phrase at the bottom for each project I work on. And what I do is I request that my team who work with me, one in Canada, one in the UK, who's a part of my team in my business, is to create a vision board for each project that we work on for their film. So if the client's goals are, you know, winning awards in certain types of festivals and they want to network, then we do images of people, you know, shaking hands to close a deal, BAFTA festival names, people on red carpets with loads of people there. And then we have as well awards, so happiness and success. And it really helps us each morning when we look at it, we put it in our eye lines so they can see it. And then they can just look at each day and be like, yes, we're going to get success now. And I as well, I just think, wow, this is so cool. Having a vision board up here with all the pictures on. It's amazing and it really does resonate. So that is a big thing to do because it does, again, change the mindset. Because when you look at it, you can manifest that and think, yes, we're going to get this for that film. There's going to be an award coming in like on that picture. And it does, you look at it and you just think, yeah, I'm going to work towards this. And it inspires you to work harder and also enjoy the process.
I like that because when I was working overseas, we did vision boards because we were basically a startup. Everywhere I went, it was like me. And then I had to create it all. And the first person I hired was the manager. I thought I could develop into a country manager. So we would have a vision board of where we are, where we want to go and each little step. And yes. Basically every day he walked in there or she walked in there, they were looking at it and going, okay, what do I need to do next? How do I make this occur? How do I make this happen? And they were just totally, they became more focused on that vision and making sure everybody else understood that vision. So whoever exactly. They talked to would buy into that vision and want to be part of it. So I think that's wonderful. Like, exactly. Like I said, we talked before and I was just like, yeah, I could see this.
I did this. I know, I love them. This is my awards vision board.
Oh, so cool.
This vision board, it's pictures of your previous clients when I've worked with, you know, people on a big festival, mm-hmm. there with his award. They won a big award in South Africa. That would have thought they were at Cannes Film Festival. That's me and a client that won 4 in 1 night. That's in Arizona. That's my podcast that won awards. Mm-hmm. So it's all just like, I just look at it each morning and I just think, wow, this is going to keep coming and coming. And I just keep getting that idea in my head about awards. And being at Tribeca as well, and Billy Zane, he won an award with one of our clients. So if he was in one of our clients, he starred in, and he got an award there. So seeing that just brings so much happiness. But also it's like, wow, let's keep doing this. You know, this is what it's all about. It's getting that success and notoriety for the clients to help them on their journey. So you're right, you buy into it. And we all have that in our office. That's not the same as mine. Obviously, every step I'm reminded of a different vision board, it's a different vision, but they have the same thing in terms of success, different images that resonate with them to really get on board the same kind of outlook.
You know what the nice thing about vision boards is, whether it's your family, you don't have to be the owner of a business or involved with a movie. It could be just your job. What do you exactly. have a vision for that job? How do you want to engage that? And you can put it there. And it could be that intention that you set every day to show up in a certain way that can make a difference in your job. So I think that's wonderful. Now, how do you incorporate spirituality into daily office routines? You know, I know we talked about the intentions, but more on the cosmic end.
Yeah. So back in, as I mentioned, with my ex-boyfriend issue, one of the spiritual counselors I spoke with talked about cosmic ordering. I didn't really click on it until a few years later, but it came back to me in my life and I saw it on Amazon about cosmic ordering. So I thought, let me look into this because he told me about it. So I'm looking into it properly now with a guidebook. So there was a book I found called Cosmic Ordering Made Easier. And in it, it talks about, you know, it's kind of like manifesting, a little bit different. It's actually been more specific and like placing an order like you would in a restaurant. You know, I want cheese with chips and Coke. So being very specific, you know what you want and know exactly what it is that you want to order. So she told me that to really get more of what you want is to ask the universe, ask a question. She said to me, what she said to me in the book, and we had a one-to-one about it because I was really excited about learning this new concept. And then she said, what you say is, what I really want is a car parking space upon my arrival to Soho, London today for the concerned. And it's important to say for the good of all concerned at the end, because it's really important to say that so no one else loses out for you to gain. So if it's something like money, to someone, anybody to die, to leave it to her. She's really just saying it for the best of all concerned, harmonious as possible. She said, try the car parking cosmic order. So I thought, all right. So I thought we'd try this, give it a go. So I thought, I'm going to get the tube into London today. I'm going to drive in. So I did the order and it's like, you know, the worst place to get a parking space is Soho in London. It's like, it's just not, it doesn't bear thinking about. So I drove in and then I was like, okay, well, here's the car park area. And then this car pulled out and I was like, whoa. And it was literally just the timing of it was perfect. It just pulls out, off he goes, and it's an empty space in this full parking space for me to get into. I was like, oh my goodness, this is incredible. And it works. I kept doing it. So the way I do it for my business is obviously each day I have goals I want to achieve. You know, I want to get a new lead for a potential new product from a client. I want to get maybe some more people interested in some of my other products. I want to ensure that one of my films gets into a film festival. So I have like that. That's like my goals each day. So I turn them into cosmic orders. So normally I do it before I go to bed each night. So I ask the universe, what I really would love and appreciate is for no less than one of my clients' films to get accepted into a film festival tomorrow, the good of all concerned. And when I go up, it's pretty much there on the phone already. It's got in or comes out in the day, but it always occurs. Just don't get attached to how you think it should occur or how it should be delivered. It might come in a different way than what you expect. And be open to new ways of it coming in, but getting what you want in just a different way. So you have to be flexible. You can't still be controlling. But that I find is great. So I always encourage business owners each morning or in the evening, whenever the best for timings, is thinking, you know, what do you want to achieve today? And ask the universe, and then you'll get it.
That's wonderful. Now, we have about a minute left, and you know what? You say, hey, how, you know, encourage your team members to take breaks, feel the feelings, and can be game-changing for well-being in the workplace. Because, you know, quite frankly, you've got all these people at home on Zoom doing all their meetings and all that stuff. And I find people who work at home on Zoom, they really don't take breaks because they feel like they're not being that productive if they do take breaks. And they should, because it could, I mean, not taking breaks is not good health-wise.
No, absolutely. No, it's not. I mean, in the whole pandemic, you know, when that first came on, people seemed to work longer hours than they would in an office because, you know, you're at home. So carry on typing all night. I mean, I was guilty of it too, but I was in a flow of different things. But I say recommend is to always take breaks because you need that inspiration. So I always like to take the afternoons off. You know, if you can, just have like, just don't look at the PC, just go away. And then when you go outside in nature, somehow, some reason in nature, wherever you might be in the world, something just seems to click. And then you get more inspired, but also you feel more refreshed and rejuvenated because you're away from the office and away from the computer. And that way, actually, when you're out in nature, you feel a lot more grateful. Just more kindness comes, washes over you. You feel totally grateful for what you're doing and that you're safe and well, etc. The usual kind of things that we take for granted. When you have that space out, a lot more stuff manifests. So by doing that in a routine every day and into that habit, it's absolutely crucial.
Oh, I agree with that. It helps to settle the mind.
Exactly.
I actually sit on a hammock in the afternoon for about 20 minutes and just not think of anything or have anything and just listen to the wind or the breeze or whatever. And it just makes all the difference in the world because, you know, whatever you have, it's just no longer there. So it's my way of reconnecting with my wife when I go home. So yeah, exactly. I think that's great. Hey, Rebecca, I want to thank you for joining us today. I think this the pearls of wisdom that you've exposed or expounded on have been wonderful. How can people get a hold of you if they want to get a hold of you or get your help?
The best way would be via Instagram, which is at RebeccaFilmDR. And also my website, where you can learn more about me and my book and what I do, which is RebeccaLouisaSmith.com.
Rebecca, thank you for joining us. Stay happy, stay healthy. We'll look forward to seeing you down the road.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show. Wasn't Dr. Rebecca Smith, the film doctor, outstanding? Many things we can do, whether you don't believe in the cosmics or spirituality, can make our life better, more productive, more engaging, which means more. You know, it's just something that you might want to think about. And again, you know what? You can go to Dr. Smith's website, Dr. Rebecca Smith, and you can look her up, get her information, read her book. I think it'd be beneficial for you. Now, what we want to do now is just talk about how to get a bigger Social Security check. But before you do that, hey, I want to truly thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting us know, letting your friends, your family members know, and associates about the Shot US. If you're enjoying the stories and helpful information, please go to our YouTube channel at Saving with Steve Sexton. I encourage you to subscribe there. And check out our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. Also, follow us on Facebook. Join the Saving with Steve Sexton Insiders Club for more financial tips. At savingwithsteve.us, you can get all the replays, exclusive access to after-show videos, guest gifts, and more. Now, let's talk about how to get a bigger Social Security check. Social Security is a vital source of for most Americans in retirement. In fact, Social Security average makeups 36% of retirees' income. But for many, it's the number one or number two source of income in retirement. You work hard for your money. You need to get every penny out of a guaranteed income. And we know as Social Security, I've got 8 ways to make sure you get a larger check or collect more money from Social Security overall, okay? First thing, you want to check your earnings records, all right? So set up a My Social Security account. Go to ssa.gov. That's ssa.gov. You'll be able to review your current earning records, okay? It's usually on page 3. You know what? You might be able to increase your benefit if you spot an error. I typically get 1 or 2 people a year that come in and complain to me that their Social Security earnings record is incorrect because they had like $120,000 with income, but it shows $1,200 or $12,000. You know what? The Social Security is not going to correct that. You need to correct that yourself. Next, when they calculate your primary earning amount, they're using your average index earnings for 35 years, and then they're going to inflation adjust it. Now, if you don't have 35 years of average earnings, what they'll do is say if you have 20 years, they're going to take the average for 20, but they're also going to add 15 years of zeros and then average it and adjust it for inflation. Now, if you have 39 years of working or earnings record, the worst 4, the smallest 4 are going to get wiped out. You're going to get the top 35, all right? So it's very important to make sure that you get the most out of there. Next, You know what? You want to beef up your earnings records. Now, how do you do that? It's always good to pump up your benefit check by successfully getting higher paying jobs, okay, throughout your life. Okay. Now, also working longer than 35 years, so the bottom four can go out there. But there's many people that have realized that, you know what, they can pump up their Social Security earnings. And one of the best ways to do that is to get a side gig. So if you're not making over $142,800, consider going to work for Lyft. Consider going to work for Home Depot or tutoring somebody. An extra $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 a year could bump up your Social Security payment. Next, wait as long as you can to collect Social Security. Now, this has some ins and outs with it, so you need to pay attention here. Number one, when it comes to Social Security and waiting longer, you've got to remember something. They're going to take your 35 years, highest earning years, average earnings, and inflation adjust. They're going to use three bend points to collect your to calculate your primary insurance amount, okay? And then that primary insurance amount, which is the amount of money you're going to receive at full retirement. So if you're born past 1960, that's age 67. Let's say you get $2,000 at the age of 67, all right? At the age of, check this out, 62, you can start taking Social Security. If you do take it at 62, you only get 70% of that $2,000. Oh, okay. So you have to understand how much that is. Two, for every year, if it's 63, you might get 78, 80%, 83, 95. When you hit full retirement, you're getting your full retirement, that 2000. And then think of this. Hey, for every year you wait past your full retirement age, you're going to get 8% more until you hit the age of 70. Now, here's the thing. You can work until the age of 70, fine. You can retire at 66 and wait 4 years until you hit the number 70. But you have to understand, you're going to have to backfill a little bit with your own money in order to get to a point where you're getting that highest Social Security check. So you want to make sure you look at that in the context of your retirement, because the last thing you want to do is if you got $2,500 a month or $30,000 a year for 4 years that you're giving up so you can get $500 or $600 more a month, okay? What will be the impact of putting money in now to when you're 80, 82, 83? So it's very important you understand that. Next, take advantage of spousal benefits. Hey, spousal benefits works like this. If your primary income earner is at full retirement, say they're getting $2,000. And let's say, you know, you're the spouse and your spousal benefit at full retirement is less than $1,000, which means it's less than 50%. You can get a spousal benefit. If you take that spousal benefit at 62 and your spouse is at full retirement, you only get 70% of 50%, all right? But it can be a benefit. I know of many people who did not take their own Social Security at the age at full retirement and waited 4 years until they were 70 to receive $400 or $500 more per month. Here's the thing. If you think about it, $400 a month is almost $5,000 a year. $500 a month, almost $6,000 a year. But if somebody lives 20 years, you know what? That's almost another $100,000 of the lifetime. So you think about that when you're making that decision, because you know what? A lot of times you can take Social Security benefits as a spouse, allow yours to grow and be in a position where you're going to have a lot more money at the age of 70. Now, consider delaying your divorce. Turns out that if you've been married for 10 years, you have the ability to select a divorce spouse benefit, which operates like a spousal benefit where it's equal to 50% of your spouse's Social Security. Okay. So if your income's less than 50% of your divorced spouse's Social Security, you can get a divorce benefit. Okay. And again, put yourself in a position later on down the road where you can get a higher payment, but you need to be married for at least 10 years. So if you've only been married for 9 years or 8 years, you might want to hang out a couple of years. I had one client that waited that one last year. And because the ex-spouse had made so much money, I mean, it made a significant difference. In fact, the spousal benefit was almost $500 more than her benefit. And then, you know what? She continued on that divorce spouse's benefit for the rest of her life. But you know, if you think about that, that was almost $500 a month for the rest of her life more than what she'd receive if she took her own, okay? Now, keep in mind, if you get remarried again, you do have an option sometimes, depending on the situations, to pick the higher of the two. Now, next, hey, a lot of people make this mistake. Once or twice a year, we get this, and here's what happens. You know what? You retire at 62, you take your Social Security, and guess what? You go decide to get a job because you got nothing else to do. Problem is, if you make more than $18,960, for every $2 you make over, you lose $1 in Social Security. If you're within 1 year of your full retirement age, you can make $50,520, and for every $3 over, you lose $1 in Social Security. I have many people got surprised when Social Security sent them a request for return of funds, which wasn't exciting. Now, here's the thing. You want to really take a look at this to make sure it's a fit for you. Because basically what Social Security is saying here, hey, look, if you're not at full retirement, okay, you can't earn very much. But once you hit full retirement, you can earn as much as you want. There's no limits, no caps, no nothing. Now, last thing, see if you qualify for survivor disabled benefits. You know what? I have a brother that just passed away 3 months ago. His wife is entitled to survivor benefits as a spouse at the age of 60. His kids, because they're under the 18, are entitled to kid benefits that'll help pay for rooms, food, the whole shot for the family. So it's important to look at those things because you can maximize your Social Security. Even if you employ just a few of these benefit boosting strategies, you may be able to collect more dollars from Social Security than you otherwise would have. So look, stick with us. We're going to be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientist at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days. Another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show. My name is Steve Sexton. As you know, we talk about the ins and outs of money. Wasn't Dr. Rebecca Smith wonderful? Oh, wonderful input. Great for the employees. Glad she was here. You know what? We also talked about how to secure a bigger Social Security check. So make sure you watch that a couple of times so you can get the most out of your hard-earned money there. Now, you know what? I'm just going to put it this way. We talk about the ins and outs of money. And my question is your money smiling? Our guest today is Ken Hanna, author of Happy Money, The Japanese Art of Making Peace with Your Money. Ken, how can we tell if our money's happy?
Hello, Steve. Thank you for inviting me. So you can tell when you imagine about your money, does that bring you a smile? Or do you feel irritated? Or do you feel squeezed? So that's your relationship with money. If you're happy, you feel like you're melting in heaven because money can do wonders. But if you have a bad relationship with money, you feel tight and squeezed and tense. So it's up to you how you have had this relationship with money.
Oh, okay. Now, okay, so I got to ask this question. you know what? You know what? People earn money, they spend money, and they do it from, according to you, from a perspective of either fear or love.
Yes.
How big success? I know you started talking about this a little bit already, but help us understand that.
Mm-hmm. So Steve, you know, people, I'm sure you love what you do. So you receive money out of love because people love you, people respect you, people thank you for doing great shows. That's why you get paid and how you get paid. And that makes you smile and happy. But unfortunately, most of us are not doing what we love to do. So we have to do it to bring our food on the table. And that's unhappy money. So when we receive a check, we feel irritated and frustrated. Is this all the money I made? You know, and it's not fun. So If you can feel happy about receiving money you made, that's happy money.
So now I want to follow it up. You know what? Mm-hmm. We can talk about happy money, but what about really poor people, single mothers, homeless? You know, it's one thing to talk about a shift from being happy with money, mm-hmm. but what about people who are truly struggling just to survive day to day?
You know, it doesn't really matter how much money you have or how much money you make, because I've met many millionaires and billionaires, and some of them are miserable. And on the other hand, I have seen many single moms who are very happy with money because they are happy with what they receive, and they live within their means. I know money is tight, but, you know, some of your parents or parent, they didn't have money, or she didn't, or he didn't have money, but you know, you could be a happy family. So don't make it a struggle. It's just numbers. So if you can have this attitude, a happy attitude toward money or life, that doesn't bring you misery. So I'm more concerned about the people who have more than enough, which is more than half of us, but still have fear around money, anxiety around money, and trying to make more money when we don't need to.
So here's the question to follow up with that. How much money does someone need to be happy?
It depends on where you live. If you live in New York, you have to make so much money. But mm-hmm. if you live in the countryside, you grow your own veggie, it doesn't cost you anything. You know, a friend of mine lives in a mountain, and he only needs to earn like $500 US dollars for bandages and medicine and all the equipment he has to buy. But all everything else, he either grows the food or neighbors give them to his family. So it's up to how close you're to capitalism. If you try to do everything with money, you have to make money. But if you are in a community that supports you, and you may not need much money. So okay. It's up to you.
No, you know what? I was just thinking about what you're saying in my own life. I've never really placed a value or a happiness on money. Mm-hmm. My happiness actually comes from other people around me being happy. Yes. My wife, seeing that my kids are growing up well and prospering and doing well in school, and mm-hmm. they're happy in their life. That's the most important thing to me.
That's beautiful.
And for me, it was interesting because I know I have peers in my business, not just mm-hmm. the radio side of this, but the financial consulting side of it. And mm-hmm. I see them, they're working crazy, 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 crazy hours. And you know what? It's never, never enough, but they have a second and third wife, and they're always worried whether they're going to run out of money or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the fear I'm talking about. So it doesn't really matter how much you make or how much you spend. It's more of your relationship with money. So unless you heal your relationship with money, you carry this money scars, is what I call, and then you keep bleeding. That's why you need more money. So, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of millionaires and billionaires, they want to make more money. Why? It's because of their egos and also because of their hunger and thirst for more money, which is not quite healthy.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, that being said, does money come with, do people have personality types when it comes to money?
Yes. You know, I've done many counseling with sometimes family counseling with money. And I used to work in my father's accounting firm, and I came across, family estate. And I found out that brothers and sisters, even they're born and brought up in the same household, you know, the same parents, but they're completely different people. I think you think of your, brothers and sisters. You know, there are different people. They love spending, they love saving, they love making money, they love, you know, just a quiet life. Or some people end up being in what I call indifferent type. You know, they don't care about money. You know, they are like school teachers and scholars and government employees. Some of them, they don't care about money. And some really care about money. That's why you have fights among siblings. So, which is very interesting. We are very different.
So again, well, let's go into that. You know what? Being a financial consultant, mm-hmm. I've had family meetings about mom and dad's finances and what's going to happen when.
Yes.
And in one situation, we had my clients were actually wiped out by a drunk driver, and their family. I got a call from the police officer because my card was in the glove box, and so did their kids. And 30 minutes after I heard from the police officer, I got a call from one of the kids, and anyone that says, "Hey, when can I get my money?" And I was like, "Wow!" So when I think about that, you know what? You know, people, they're fighting. You know, and I've also had these family meetings, but after they've passed away, and I'm sitting there reading the trust of who gets what. And I have family members, you know, jumping over the table to fight on each other. And you know what? You know what? What can families do when these fights about who gets what? And so, you know, what can they do about that? What can family? How can families deal with that?
It's a deep issue, because it's almost like, you know, what's going on in the world. You know, can we love each other or can we hate each other? Mm-hmm. So we have a hard time keeping peace in our own homes. So, you know, let alone in a community or in a among countries. So we have to really understand the other side of the story. I've seen the same similar fights as you did, Steve, that, you know, brothers and sisters, the issue is fairness. You know, we are not feeling that we're being treated fairly, you know, by our parents or by a school system or by legal system or by country, you know. I don't know what's going on, but we feel it's not fair. You know, somebody else is getting whatever the good thing, but we are not. So that is a feeling that we are lack of something, and somebody is taking advantage of us. So that's why we are stuck with this fear. So just try to imagine how your brothers and sisters brought up in the same household. You may not have noticed the story, you know. And oftentimes it happens that a mother or a father loves a certain child. And then, you know, the other one ends up being a black sheep. So there's this emotional fight and resentment built up. It's not just only one day. It's over the decades.
Oh, yeah. It's that family trauma. Because, you know, I was just thinking about the two or three times that instance I talked about reared its ugly head in different fashions. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be the black sheep in the family that has the most animosity and I want to say resentment against the other members of the family. Mm-hmm. And they also feel entitled to certain things. You know, I had one that, you know, broke into mom and dad's safe and sold all their gold coins. And when mom and dad passed away, she was expecting a whole lot of money. And she got this lovely note from her folks. And it wasn't that lovely of a note about why she wasn't going to receive anything. And you know what? You know, that was something interesting. Wow. So help me. I want to go dig into more of the personality types. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, I think you have probably 7 or 8 different personality types. Could you kind of walk us through that? But before you do, we need to take a break. So, hey, stick with us. We have more Ken Honda talking about, you know what, happy money. And we'll be just right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, I want to welcome you back to the Saving with Steve Show. Again, I want to thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends and family and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City. E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Network, all these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, live a life of personal financial freedom. Hey, now also follow us on Facebook at SavingWithSteve.SavingWithSteveSexton. You can join the Insider Club at SavingWithSteve.us and get all the replays, behind the scenes, guest gifts, books, the whole shot. Now, we're back here with Ken Honda talking about happy money. And you know what? I just want to get into the 8 different types of personalities when it comes to, you know what, your money personality, because I think this is really interesting.
Mm-hmm. So as I said, we are born and brought up in the same household, but we grow into different types. For example, there's a saver, you know, who loves saving. They hate spending in other ways. They love to look at the bank statement online and a few times a day, and that brings a good smile on them. And the other one is a money maker. They love doing business. They like working. So the more money they make, the happier they get. The other one is a worrier, which was my mother. My mother used to worry about money. My father had enough and I had enough, but almost at the end of the month, she calls me up and said, hey, are you okay with money? You know, are you going to pay all the bills? And I said, Mom, this is like, it's almost like a monthly saying hello to me. So she worries about money. And I know your mother or father, you could be one of
those. Actually, that's my wife.
Yes. Yeah, see, and the other one is a money in different type. People are literally indifferent. They don't care, or they don't even know that money exists. One of my clients was a college professor. His wife got a call from police, and he seemed to have dropped his wallet on the street just a couple weeks ago, and somebody brought it to the police, and then his wife got a call. And she asked him, where's your wallet? And she wanted to, you know, test. And he said, I think it's my bag. And then he was searching for a second, and then, there isn't. Maybe it's in my office. That means that he's never touched his wallet for the past 2 weeks. And then he doesn't even know how much he makes. You know, he lets his wife take care of all that. Mm-hmm. And the hippie and all the other combinations in between. And sometimes you could be saving. And then after 3 months of saving, you just spend it all. It's almost like a diet. You know, you try to cut down the food intake and then
you gain it all back.
Yeah.
So, well, you know what? I want to talk about the one that's indifferent. I had a younger brother who is like in the state of Indiana. He's considered one of the top welders, technical type person. He spent all of his money to develop more cool welding things figure out how to do stuff and fabricate stuff that people were in awe about. And he really had no clue about money. In fact, before he passed away, he had bought a 3D printer to figure out how to do other things because that's what made him happy, not the money.
I see. And, you know, a brother like that could have a brother like you, you know, a very successful financial planner. So, you know, people cannot believe that these two are born in the same family. Mm-hmm. We are growing up that way. So that's why it's so hard to understand each other because we're different. And I think it's great because we can appreciate one another. So when I give a couple counseling, oftentimes I bump into these extreme opposite couples because that's how attraction starts. You know, the saver type and spender type. A saver type gets attracted to a spender type because she or he knows a good restaurant, how to enjoy life. And the saver is beautiful because he or she has a very stable, you know, conservative financial life because they have built enough financial asset. So they're attracted to one another and they get married. And after a few years, they're fighting because the saver says you spend too much and the spender says you're not enjoying life and they get a divorce. So
it's oil and water.
Sure, story, right?
Yeah. You know, that's so interesting. Now, what about, I have clients that would rather, they might be like your mom, but they would rather they go out of their way to help others out.
Yes.
What type of personality trait is that?
It's a combination of spender, but I think a combination of moneymaker, but plus philanthropist, you know. Who's like my mentor, Warren, he was called Warren Buffett of Japan. He was so generous to share his wealth, his wisdom. Mm-hmm. So those people are, I just call them a Mother Teresa type, you know, and She doesn't necessarily make or receive money for her own sake, but she goes into a bunch of business people's meeting and she says, "Hello, everyone. I'm here to rob all of you." And then, you know, people are just willing to they're smiling and laughing and they're taking off their credit cards and just donate whatever they had. So, you know, the very happy ones. And they are the ones who are just making impact on the world.
So here's the question. I've always wanted to know gambler.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gambler. I forgot to mention gambler. Yes. I love them a lot because I have a friend of that. Man who is into future, you know, market. And now he's in Bitcoins, by the way. And
okay.
He just makes so much money. And then when he made a killing on the day, he calls me up and say, "Hey, are you feeling for a drink?" And then after a couple of months, he says, I feel like my life is over because I lost like $3 million in one day." And then a few weeks later, he just calls me up and said, "Hey, do you know how much money I made?" So I love those people, you know.
As long as things are going well, when he asks you for a drink.
As long as they're not my wife or my husband, you know, they're lovely people.
That's funny. What about, you know what, it talks in here about like the repressed spender.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are so many types and I can keep going on, but you know, we don't want to spend, but we have this secret wish to spend it all. And if the gambler archetype comes in, it usually ruins your life. It's almost like alcohol or drug addiction, mm-hmm. you know? So, yeah, the reason why I'm teaching these things is that I want you to know there are certain types in you. Even though you're a very conservative, modest person, you're a gambler, which could be your grandfather's blood in you. Mm-hmm. You know? And then somehow after 40 years of sleep, that DNA wakes up and just, you know, spends investing with most ridiculous thing. So you have to really watch out who's in your body. And then you figure out, "Oh, I didn't know that I had a warrior in me. I keep worrying about it." Or "I have to make money. I have to make money. I have to do more. I have to do more, make more." And, you know, so my mentor used to say, "Don't tame a money monster in your house." Because the more money you spend, it's almost like feeding the monster pet. The little one grows and then say, "More money, more money." So buy another couch, buy a bigger couch. They're happy for it temporarily. But the monster keeps saying, "More money, more money." And they keep growing. And then at the end of your life, this monster is going to eat you up because, you know, you cannot keep up. You cannot keep up doing this. Mm-hmm. So you have to really know when is enough. I think that's the message I can share with everybody. When is enough for you? Mm-hmm. When do you feel like, "Oh, I have more than enough"? This feeling brings you happiness.
I want to shift one thing over to kids. Mm-hmm. I know you have a special relationship with your daughter. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for parents with kids about money happiness?
I want the parents to teach kids that money is beautiful. Money is wonderful. You can do it first. It's like a tool, you know. It's like a knife. You can make the most beautiful and delicious food, but it could be dangerous. It could, you know, you could cut yourself or you could stab somebody with that. So money is a beautiful, almost like a Swiss Army knife. You can do so many things. But at the same time, unless you're careful, you know, you could hurt yourself. But overall, money can bring happiness to anybody in the world because I've never seen anybody go unhappy when they receive money. Like
that's true.
People get lightened up, like, "Wow," you know. So my mentor used to give solid gold coins to anybody with a big smile because he thinks he or she will keep smiling when they're complimented with a smile. So about the smile. So I think people love money, but our problem is as much as we love money, we hate money because we feel like money brings us trouble because of the experiences we had. So we have to heal our money wounds and money past. And by doing that, we can have a better relationship with money and then hopefully better relationship with life. So we can start trusting more about our lives.
That's wonderful. Hey, Ken. We're just about to wrap up. So what I'd like you to do is let us know how we can get a copy of Happy Money and how people can get a hold of you if they'd like your help.
Thank you for asking. So you can find all the information at kenhonda.com, K-E-N, and Honda is in a car, kenhonda.com. And I have all the free information in English. And I do teach some courses in English. So hopefully, if you're interested, we'll be connected online.
You know what? The cool thing about this is this is going to go to 85 countries. So who knows? You might see talk to people from around the world. So Ken, sure. I want to thank you for being part of our show today, imparting the wisdom that you have. And I just keep thinking through what you were saying. Oh my God, I know this person, I know that person. That's me. So you know what? I've gotten a lot out of this. I know our viewers have. And I want to thank you for joining us. I wish you a happy, healthy year.
Thank you, Steve. And I wish you all happiness and success to all of you. Thank you
so much.
Bye-bye.
We'll see ya. Bye. Here we go. That was Ken Honda. You know what? What a wonderful talk about money happiness. If you want to get his book, you can always go to kenhonda.com. That's kenandhonda.com. As well, if you want to get in touch with him, if you want some help with money management or being happier with money, you can do that. Again, great guest with Dr. Rebecca Smith. And we talked about, hey, how you can score a bigger Social Security check. So look forward to seeing you next week. Happy and healthy week to you all. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton.